That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable. Ah.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Yeah, I just flew back, real whirlwind trip to see the fam in Detroit.
Yes, Michigan girl, and it's whole inspired Michigan episode coming up. How was your trip? How was your trip?
It was awesome. Got to see, you know, extended family. On Sunday, we all had a big get together, and about 14, 15 of us just all got together to have like a big late, you know, like a Sunday supper, except we were like, we're not cooking. You know what we're going to do? We are going to order from the local Middle Eastern Lebanese spot and get the biggest spread you've ever seen. Andrea, you know the garlic sauce?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know the garlic sauce.
I know the garlic sauce.
We got so much food that the garlic sauce was just in its own styrofoam containers that you would put like a whole entree in, but it was filled with garlic sauce.
That's like fart heaven, baby.
It was good. And everyone eats it, so no one stinks. You all just cancel each other out. Anyways, We're feeling inspired, and so we'll get into it a little bit later in the episode. But welcome to Sidework Podcast, everybody. I'm your host, Brooke Van Poplin.
Hi, guys. I'm your other host, Andrea Wallace. And yeah, I'm hungry because we always podcast when I have not eaten, and now I'm hungry. Like, I did have a handful of honey roasted peanuts on top of my protein shake, but I tell you what, after this, I'm just like, I could just like take a bath and a little baba ganoush, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm. I just, you know, and I'm that person who I don't really like eggplant at all.
Right.
Like I think you've turned me on little eggplant parmesan on top of pizza. I can get down with that.
And for me, it's really hit and miss because if it's not prepared correctly, I'll get like a little allergy numbness
me
in
too.
My throat.
Mm-hmm. Yes. But yeah. It's probably because that's what nightshades probably do.
Yeah. Well, they cause more inflammation in your joint more than anything. That's gross. What they do. It's probably like a capsin, but whatever. Anyway, yeah, there is something to it. And bananas, like, can I get the same thing if they're not ripe enough? But it's the only vegetable that I'm like, am I feeling a little anaphylactic? Like, you know, what am I doing? You know?
God, okay. So it's the fruit or the vegetable,
but
whatever
if you roast it and maybe it's the seed, who knows? But if you roast it and puree it and just slather it in olive oil, boy, oh boy, oh boy, am I ready to go.
Well, since I did just fly and enjoyed a nice an overnight flight. That was brutal.
A nice violent free flight. I just read an article today that a passenger had to be duct taped because he tried to open the emergency exit and everybody had to tackle and duct tape him. Boy, oh boy. This one's shinier. This is a shinier headline.
Yeah, this one's a little more positive if we're talking about flying. We're jumping right into some headlines, but Alaska Airlines, which I stan Alaska Airlines. I'm sure you also enjoy flying, right? It's a very West Coast thing.
Yeah, and they absorbed Virgin American, so you might get some of those Virgin planes, which I always found was very cush. Yeah.
Very nice. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's great. That's a hot tip. I tend to I'll choose Alaska if you're just trying to get up to San Francisco
real
quick, or go up to Portland, also really nice. But so Alaska Airlines, beloved airline over on this side of the country, has basically coupled up with Fremont Brewing to create their own in-air Cloud Cruiser India Pale Ale.
Ooh, so
they're right. They made their own IPA that is served in cabin or in their lounges. But it's an exclusive beer that they made with the Seattle-based brewery. And this sounds like all the lovely drinky things and notes that Andrea would like, but it's described as having bright orange, melon, and tropical notes. And it's got a beautiful can. I think it's a very friendly, inviting little can. And said, yeah, like this is just a brilliant sort of mashup and collection of this brewery with the beloved, like I said, Pacific Northwest airline.
And she's a 6.5. This is not a session IPA.
Oh, honey, Cloud Cruiser got a little fire.
A little bite to her. Yeah, for sure. You know, I if my body could tolerate beer anymore, I've really taken a turn over the years here at Sidework Podcast. I mean, yep. I'd give her a sip. I'd give her a try. I think this is awesome. I mean, I think it's like if you're, you take advantage of the fact that you're a Pacific Northwest-based airline and reap the benefits of all the yummy, yummy things produced in the area and serve them on your plane. What's
totally?
Next? They're gonna be tossing fish in first class.
Or how about what about the other airlines and the exclusive beverages? What would Spirit Airlines? They'd get some sort of shitty hard seltzer.
Where are they out of? They'd have to be like Kirkland hard seltzer for sure. No offense to Kirkland. It's actually I drink plenty of it. It's fine. I feel like or like a Mike's Hard Lemonade, something like that. You know what I mean? Delta would be like, I don't know, Kendall Jackson Chardonnay. I'm gonna go.
I feel like they would try because they do serve white wine that is
Moscow
Mule.
Yeah.
I feel like if they were to collaborate, they would at least try and pretend that they were working with a vineyard in Northern California.
Sure, but small, batchy.
Whatever, Delta.
We could keep playing this game. I feel like we'd have to have a little meeting and come back with all of our funny quips about it. But, we'd be able to do it. Anyway, I'm sure at some point in the game, and I don't really drink on airplanes. Do you drink on airplanes?
Yeah, because I'm usually going cross country.
That's true. I mean, it depends. If I'm going international, it's fine. If I'm on vacation, it's one thing. I just don't like what it does to my body. And that's, you know what I mean?
Totally.
Yeah.
Totally fair. When you land, you feel really weird. Because then you have to go on with your day and you're like, should I get another drink or do I need coffee and a reset?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Totally. I'd rather have a Xanax than a cocktail. But it's just me. And maybe, which airline would just be like, this is our own version of Xanax that we give to our, yeah, that could also be a fun thing to think about. Think about it, airlines, if you're listening. Mm-hmm.
This also was just the coolest. Now, granted, this was like a wonderful wintry headline. And this is in Sweden. It's apparently the only completely ski-through McDonald's. it's in a ski village in Salen or Salen. I don't know how you pronounce it. It's got the umlaut on it, but Salen, Sweden. And it's just up in the slopes. And basically, they have it built to be accommodating for you to be able to ski up, go to the window, get yourself a hot little hamburger. Over like to the left, there's a McCafe that just pumps out hot chocolate for those, you know, little frozen hands and little red, you know, windburned faces. And you can actually then ski on inside, but they actually have table service because they can't have you fucking walking around with your skis on.
Sure, absolutely.
And really, really long, like pub style tables for
everyone.
Yeah,
lodge style. Yeah.
Lodge style feeds into the alpine feeling, but I'm officially obsessed. I don't like skiing, but I would maybe do a little cross country.
Oh, this is fully for the people who don't like skiing, but they'll sit in the lodge and like drink booze, like boozy hot chocolate or a toddy, you know, by the fire. This is them feels for sure. And oddly enough, like cheaper than even British prices for McDonald's, it says, which I think for Scandinavia, that's pretty amazing considering.
Well, they were
staggering prices of everything because of the immense, tremendous quality of life.
Yeah, what? So they're what is it? The crone, the Swedish crone, is bottomed out right now. So yeah, no. So they were saying this year they saw more English people than they've ever seen because the British can push their money farther going to Sweden for the first time ever.
That's interesting. Wow. Well,
guys, if you're
every day.
If you're in Sweden, go skiing on through and grab yourself a filet of fish.
I love it. It's the best Swedish accent I've ever heard.
Yeah.
Cue yodeling music. Guys, we have a server submitted story today. Super excited. All right, here we go. Hello, Sidework friends. As you may or may not recall, the restaurant I work at is seasonal and it closes in the winter. I totally go dormant and then have all the episodes of Sidework to catch up on, which amazing. But newsflash, last year, my season was my last season at that restaurant. My bosses didn't renew their contract with the state park and have built their own steakhouse, which is very exciting. And I'm the head of bar and service. The whole drink menu and all things bar related came from this bitch. Tonight, it's our soft opening. Holy moly. And naturally, the stress from all of it made my body say F you and a sinus infection has taken over. Not even my daily vitamins, essential oils, and daily fruits and veggies could kick this bitch. But the show must go on. So antibiotics and decongestant will be saving my ass. I hope. Be the saving grace. I just want to pop in and give you the tea on me. I hope all is well. Godspeed, good tips, good health, good vibes. And that's from Simon, who Hi. We adore.
Sweet Simon, always giving us the gossip.
I gotta tell you, all that stress just catches up. It just gets to you. I swear to God. But wow, this is very exciting. Simon, what is the name of said steakhouse? Shoot us a little bit of
If you look in our messages on IG, I think he shot a little photo
Best of luck. Excited to check out the bar menu for sure. And how interesting to go from seasonal to full season work now. No more hibernation in the winter. Listen to our asses. Hopefully you can still do that on the way to work or, you know, when you have time to actually catch up. But wow.
We did get one other really quick. It was more of a question than it was a server submitted story, but I really appreciated this. This person wrote in and says, do you ever talk about older people returning to working in restaurants? And I was like, oh, you're so cute. We are older people. You know, but this,
yeah,
I think
like
this
what
person,
are we? Yeah, what's qualifying?
I think this guy, yeah, might be a little bit older than us, maybe even by 20 years. He was saying, you know, I used to work in restaurants in the 80s and 90s.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I was like, funny enough, I can't point you to an episode because we're talking about, and we want to have a few guests to talk about what it's like going back in. And so thanks for reminding us that we want to get those in the can and recorded soon.
I mean, my brain goes to like the, you know, you hear about the restaurant in Japan that's like the older folk who have dementia and it's called translate to the name of the restaurant is like the restaurant of forgotten orders, you know, where they have people with Alzheimer's and dementia, like taking your order and serving you. And I'm just like, okay, I'm in. Like,
you know where to put me when I get old.
I mean, at this point, if there's not going to be any retirement options, I'll probably be waiting tables with dementia when I'm 75 anyway. It's not going to be an adorable program. It's going to be real life, guys.
It's going to be America.
Hey, fuck. Anyway. Yeah, anyway, server submitted stories. You guys, shoot them away. Sidewarkpod@gmail.com.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road.
With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey. Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey. Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Obviously, I'm a little bit excited. I realized that as long as we've been doing the podcast, I've never really talked ad nauseum in a concentrated way about where and how I grew up in Michigan.
Nice.
And we have Michigan listeners and friends of the pod who are still living there to this day. But today we're going to discuss Dearborn, Michigan. And the food, it's basically a Middle Eastern paradise in the middle of Michigan. All this like cold weather talk, you're transported to the desert and the delicious flame broiled meats and charred vegetables and all sorts of whipped up beans and chickpeas, what have you. But I thought it would be awesome to let people know, because I keep surprising them when I say that Dearborn, Michigan has the largest population of Arab Americans in the entire world outside of the Middle East. And a lot of people are like, wait, what? And I've mentioned probably a few times that it was completely normal. We grew up eating hummus and grape leaves.
Wow.
Because,
it's normalized. That's just what's everywhere. Yeah.
You'd get a chili dog and a plate of grape leaves, you know? Very Michigan specific.
Wow.
We were talking about, you know, Verner's earlier too. But anyways, because I think you're also possibly seeing in the headlines, right, that, that Michigan right now, in terms of being a battleground state for the upcoming election and so on and so forth, that all eyes are on Detroit and Dearborn right now, because this large population of Arab Americans are pissed at Joe Biden that he's ignoring, you know, so just this isn't coming out of nowhere. So I think I've found myself telling people in my conversations like, oh, no, you don't get it. It's a portion of Michigan is literally the Middle East. Mm-hmm. And it's been that way for well over 120, 150 years.
Wow.
So let's get into a little bit of the geography and then the more fun part, which is the fucking food,
cool,
baby.
Cool.
So basically, Arab migrants, mostly Syrian and Lebanese, initially first began to come to Detroit in the late 1880s. They were basically looking to escape their own military drafts and looking for work. And then the Palestinian Muslims followed in the 1910s and early 20s. And a lot of people were being drawn over with the possibility of working for Henry Ford, because he's from Dearborn and that's where his factories were. And he invented the frickin' Model T. Mm-hmm. So it was a booming industry, and a lot of immigrants flocked from all parts of the world basically to come work in Dearborn for the automotive industry.
Mm-hmm.
So this was just a big hub for also what are known as Catholic Chaldeans, which are Christian Iraqis, which a lot of people don't know. Like, a lot of Armenians are Christian. There were also tons of Yemenites, and basically Arabs across the Middle East basically continued to come to Dearborn and Detroit even after the auto industry declined, because they're like, we're looking for a better life, and there's already huge established community. So it really is. The city's estimated, well, that's an old status. Hold on, status update. So I just looked up the most recent census. So there are about 110,000 residents of Dearborn, and well over half are Middle Eastern, North African, or Arab.
Wow.
So it's like a total melting pot. And that's a big city.
It smells delicious. Those numbers smell delicious.
You can smell it from here. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. It's basically the home to the Islamic Center of America. It's this humongous, like wildly huge mosque. And it's like this kind of like dazzling visual tourism for people to come all over the world to see. Obviously, I was working in Middle Eastern restaurants right after 9/11. So that was very interesting.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I would imagine. Yeah, because I wonder, there's the concentration in Dearborn, right? And then how far is Dearborn from like Detroit proper?
It's right there. It's a Western ring because Detroit's very round.
It's like Paris, right?
The grid. It's called the donut of wealth that surrounds Detroit because like Detroit's very poor and run down, but there's a ring of wealth that runs around it in all directions. It's very messed up. But Dearborn would kind of be in a Western outer ring of Detroit.
Got it. And while it's a very concentrated area and, you know, we'll get back to obviously what you're talking about. Like, I'm just trying to get, you know, the further out, if you're going out further, like, I'm sure there's a trickle out of like the epicenter of like where this hub of like Arab Americans are. But I'm sure it's not like there's just, you know, I mean, it's, yeah.
We also, in Detroit and Michigan in general, huge population of people from Pakistan and India as well. That's also, and then, you know, those cultures kind of flock together. When I would wait tables, you would feel and you would feed and you would see a lot of Indian families coming in to be like, ooh, like, let's go get some of that sort of close to home, yeah, but not really
sure
Middle Eastern food. And, you know, because obviously there's good Indian, like any kind of good food you want, you can get in Detroit.
It's awesome.
But going out for Middle Eastern is very much a Southern Michigan thing. So yeah, obviously like it was crazy. There was ton of like mistrust and super duper ramped up racism in the area after 9/11. So kind of to do like, what would the word be? To just kind of get ahead of it and to start doing some, you know, to show the world that like are so many ridiculously positive things about the Arab culture. The people of Dearborn kind of went throughout the world and raised thousands of dollars to build the first ever Arab American National Museum,
wow,
which opened in 2005. And I've actually never been. But yeah, like the Arab world has 22 countries. And it kind of like takes you through all the various cultures, the history and traditions. And then the museum also sponsors this, which you would love. You can either go self-guided or with a guide, but do a walking Dearborn food tour called Yalla Eat, and Yalla means let's go in Arabic.
Yeah.
Yalla, Yalla. So anyways, it's like a total powerhouse for food. And obviously, Middle Eastern, you know, is king, but we also have killer Mexican, Thai, you name it. We've got our Detroit style pizza, baby. You know, we got our coney dogs. But Michigan's a food city. So anyways, that's just a little bit about it. So one of the first things that kind of gave Arab immigrants a place to start selling their wares and their goods is this very cool spot in Dearborn called Eastern Market.
Ooh,
which,
cool.
Yeah, you would love it. It's very much like the Reading Terminal in Philly, like the Ferry Building in San Francisco, the Grand Central Market here in L.A. And I'm asked, what is the Baltimore one?
Lexington Market.
I loved going to that one with you and Brian. That was super, super fun. So Eastern Market has been there. Oh, God. Let's see. I mean, it's got crazy history. So it's been there since like 1841. It's in the Cadillac Square, which means it is lined by, if you know your Michigan roads, Gratiot Avenue and North Mack. And it's right off I-75.
Cool.
And yeah, it used to be like basically it was devoted for people to sell anything from hay and woods, and everyone would be in little stalls or sheds, and then they might even be selling cows. And so now traditionally where you've got the more modern wares like flowers and food and all that stuff, all the old paintings of, you know, hay bales and cows like still remain on the wall from the original version of Eastern markets.
When I think open markets, I think Middle Eastern, I think bazaars. I mean, mm-hmm. I feel like the origin, mm-hmm. you know, that seems like a very origination. So it just makes sense that that would just be the first thing that was established would be a big open air market for everybody to
Hell
go to.
Yeah. But you'd have every culture representing, you know, and selling what they sell. And you would go and it would, you know, obviously be the big days would be Saturdays where everyone goes down and gets all their goodies. But a lot of people don't know that Detroit has one of these famous open air situations where you can go get lots and lots of good food. So anyways, like Dearborn makes like top eating city lists all the time. It gets featured on Eater Detroit. Like Thrillist was singing all the praises of Middle Eastern food in Dearborn and around the area. So I figured we should start, if people are not super familiar, by just letting them know, like, what is traditional Middle Eastern food and what is halal food? Halal food basically is let me open this up real quick. Halal food is kind of, it's the same principles as kosher in Jewish culture. But halal in Arabic just means that it's food permissible under Islamic law, mm-hmm. right? So that culture does not eat pork. They ain't no pork, baby. They're not doing it. Leave that to all your beautiful Asian countries that love them some pig.
And us and other U.S. like the South, you know what I mean? Yeah, yeah.
Of course, we love our pork here. But specifically halal meat, when I was working with, you know, my Arabic friends, like from Lebanon, Syria, Palestine, all over the place, really their definition to me of what halal, the principle is of it and what halal meat is, basically humane slaughtering of animals. You do a clean cut through the jugular vein and the carotid artery to like absolutely drain all that blood, you know, because the consumption of blood is considered the opposite of halal, which is haram. But even more beautiful, if you're a small farmer, I was told that before you sacrifice the animal to eat, is that you comfort it, mm-hmm. you face it toward the sun.
Right.
And yeah. then you thank it and you recite a chant and a prayer of thankfulness before you kill it, which is like, that's how it should be.
Absolutely. I want to go that way too. When I'm ready to leave this plane, just point me toward the sun. Thank me for my service,
Andrea.
And just slit my throat real quick. The Costco business across the street from us, like they have tons of halal meat in their section. I'm assuming it's because they cater to a lot of food trucks. And yeah. you know, I know when I see food trucks, I always see like halal as like, mm-hmm. you know, a big advertisement for a lot of their offerings. So I assume that's probably why, you know, but yeah.
Well, that's, yeah, you would like, you know, keeping kosher is like, you know, keeping halal, what have
and
you.
And if we ever want to get our hands on a whole goat or lamb, just right across the street from me, Brooke, we can go get one.
You don't have to ask me twice.
Brooke, where are you? Brooke, where are you going? Oh, she's left.
she went to get the goat. So obviously, you know, chickpeas and parsley are big staples, Lebanese diet. Mm. You know, you get your the mashed chickpeas. You've got all the beautiful ways you can deal with it. You know, hummus is like flowing through my veins at all times. The hummus in Detroit, Andrea, it it's almost slippery. That's how fucking silky and smooth and perfect it is.
I mean, look, there's a reason now where I was like, oh, this is probably why Brooke served like Middle Eastern food at her wedding. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Like, yeah. Yeah. Just like it's such a traditional way to like, yeah, have a feast, like have a celebration.
You get the most bang for your buck doing family style if it's Middle Eastern food, if it's Arabic food. So, but obviously like chickpea puree with fava beans and spices and goodies makes crunchy what? Falafel with the bright green center. You have your tahini. You have all of your grilled meats. Or if you want the dark part of the meat, it's seasoned and chopped up really little and grilled. And that's where you get your shawarma. But basically, ooh, baby, it's just dips and meats and kibbeh, like meat kibbeh. Kafta is another one that I love. So we were, our friend is Lebanese. I was hanging out with her. This is my mom's best friend. We were just talking on Sunday and she's like, do you love kafta? I'm like, I love kafta. And she's like, because this is how I used to make my hamburgers. She's like, I didn't know that you didn't you know, add all of the extra yeah, that you didn't add spice. And sometimes it'll have a little bit of like barley or cracked wheat in it as well, and then a lot of fresh chopped parsley and onion.
Yummy.
And you grill that shit. And she's like, I just used to make hamburgers. And they're like, Mom, you're making Lebanese food.
That's hilarious.
Essentially, like for me, when I got to eat this pretty much on a daily basis as a server in these restaurants for sure, like I didn't get sick for 3 years, like not a fucking sniffle.
Wow. Just like all the garlic and herbs and spices and wow.
Clean, clean.
Well, you're also getting so much iron from those chickpeas. Like, yeah. Uh huh.
Oh, yeah. Like I said, there is hummus coursing through my veins. But yeah, so wait, do you see in the document I put in a photo? So my first ever job working at Aladdin's, and this was in Lansing, Michigan, which was, you know, my college town, and they opened in 1997. They are still out there kicking butt. It's a family owned business. They took me in like their own family. I think I realize sometimes when I eat at places so much that I better just get a job there, because that's kind of what happened with Aladdin's.
You take over. I love this, especially this like front counter where you pay at the register kind of a place when you leave. And yep. There's a counter with like probably some baked goods are probably making their own like baklava and pita you can take home. And like
that case to the right, I'll send you more photos. But most people don't know that there's more than just one kind of baklava. There's like 100 types.
I knew
types.
That. I like a rolled personally, but like this is, I mean, this gives me like a, you know, when I worked at the Lithuanian bakery kind of feels when I was like so young. It was, yeah. I do love a mural painted on a wall.
If you scroll down a little further, it's a wonderfully tacky dining room.
So good.
You know, a place is going to be really good when they have
hot sauce and ketchup.
Yep, hot sauce and ketchup. The ocean painted on the wall. Fake plants hanging in the corner. But I didn't get to work evenings very often. I was their lunch girl, me and my coworker Nasser. And he was a way older man from Lebanon. And he was cool as hell. But their whole family took me in. They were so sweet. Amal and Ali were the owners. And then Amal's younger sisters, Dina and Noha, were also here working in the kitchen. Noha had just left Lebanon with her children and was learning English. And I actually taught her and her kids English.
Nice. That's amazing.
I know. I mean, was I qualified? But I just said, sure, I'll try.
Sure.
And I went over there a couple times to work on that, and it was just really cute. And I was like, I'm clearly in over my head. I don't know how to teach them English, but I'll go. I'll give it a go. But they were great, and they're still all there doing the thing, and they are so well loved in the community. Everyone's like, they're the freaking nicest people, and they're so kind. And I just full on agree. And it was just a cute little hole in the wall in a strip mall.
I love this. I'm telling you, I'm popping ahead to this next article. And my mouth just dropped open, like looking at the food. I want all this. We need to do like a pilgrimage, like back to your homeland, Brooke, so we can eat all this food.
This is why we need a show.
We need a television show. Hi. We have so many episodes.
We have to do our Atlanta episode.
Don't you guys want to see us like go wait tables at these restaurants for one and then just talk about, yeah.
I would visit them, and I bet she would be like, and I would have to be like, no. Okay, wait. Let me show you a picture. I had like clown hair. I had like cropped, flaming maroon, like really, really cropped, punky hair. And I was really in a phase of my life for sure. If I showed an old
don't
picture.
Don't fight the seether. That's so good.
Oh my goodness. But so that was basically working with them for a year and a half gave me such a insider look at the food, at the culture. I got invited to family parties where it's like the whole extended family comes and you stay all night and everyone smokes hookah and you
dance. Yeah.
And grandma holds the babies, and it's just the best. So I went on then after I left college, and I was like, I'm going to take my, you know, Arab American chops and go work at the Big Bad Boy, which is the Detroit area staple originated in Dearborn called La Chiche.
So
and it credits itself as the first restaurant to bring Middle Eastern food to Detroit, which probably not true. Maybe I'm sure there were some mom and pop places, but it was notorious. It was really flashy. It was big. It was so successful, so much so that they had several locations. And I worked at the one in Troy, Michigan, which was a little closer to where I worked. I was 100% the only white girl. They were so amused that I wanted a job. And I think they were kind of like, all right, fuck it. Let's let this crazy white girl work here. Whatever. Let's see if she lasts, you know.
And I did.
But that was even crazier because working with everyone at Aladdin's, everyone was from Jordan, Lebanon, or Egypt, right? So now you're in Detroit, like in the melting pot, the Metro Detroit area. My coworkers were from this was exactly what I described: Syria, Yemen, Jordan. I met people from Tunisia. My wow. friend Walid was from Tunisia, Morocco. Then me and the other two girls who were the outsiders, because one was from Malta and one was Greek, and we were like the white girls.
Oh my God.
And but Iraq, Iran, Palestine, Egypt, like everywhere you can imagine were all of my coworkers. Everyone was so fun. I loved the cooks. They all just a lot of chopping and yelling and open flames. Our manager was a monster. That was the only bad thing.
Sure.
He was a literal villain named Mustafa. And I never met someone who I never knew what the word sociopath was until I met this guy. And he just was this like angry, like so pissed to be a manager. And one day during a shift meeting, he threw a fork at my head. So
because
I wasn't paying attention. Sure. So I got a fork thrown at me.
Wow.
But the crazy thing is La Chiche went down in like 2006 and I was there 2002 to 2003, and it went down because the owner became a fugitive who has since been hiding in Lebanon, shut down all of his restaurants, and was accused of stealing $20 million across all the restaurants and funneling it into goods to basically feed back into Hezbollah. Like,
how long was La Chiche open?
Wait, it was open for a long time. Yeah. And
wow.
Yeah, dude.
$20 million.
I know. So very interesting, you know, and it's interesting to go back and to read old coverage, even like this one of these is like a Chicago Tribune article, and it's just like
over 20 years. Yeah.
Yeah. The slant in the writing back then to even now is just, it all uses terms that make anyone from the Middle East sound like a terrorist.
Oh,
and
no.
It's just like, I know. And it was something that I wasn't fully paying attention to on my end. And then you go back and you're like, it's worse than ever right now. It's ridiculous. Our journalism is so bad at painting Arabs, or specifically Palestinians, as like all like these terror mongers who they're just peaceful people with good food and great, and they love family.
Yeah.
But yeah, like this is one guy who decided to skim off his own business and to escape fraud charges, just fucked off to Lebanon and has been harbored there and hid there.
Wow.
And they're kind of like, you're a hero. They're like, you got us all these supplies, you know, because he used it. I mean, he made money in the deal, but he was also bringing in very, very needed product.
Yeah.
Poor people in Lebanon. And I mean, whatever, he's no saint, nothing like that, but
it's kind of Robin Hooding in a way, you know.
Yeah. But so La Chiche was gone for a couple years, but then someone came back and reopened it, and now they just call it New La Chiche because they
that's so good.
I know.
Yeah.
But when I tell you that at that restaurant, this was the kind of place, like picture, like, you know, wood-fired pizza situation in a restaurant where, you know, where they're going in with the paddle and throwing your pizza. And this was in one side of the restaurant. The fire was always going. There was the guy who baked bread all day and would take the flat little size of like a small disc the size of your palm and would throw the raw dough in, and the pita would puff up
wow.
in about 40 seconds, and then he'd take the paddle and then boop, 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 just like you would be taking people like flaming hot, puffy, thin, crispy, air-filled pockets of love, and you would dip it in garlic sauce, and it was just...
And then it looks like huge, like, combination platters of food, like platters, it's, right?
It's incredible. You can get, you know, swordfish kebabs, like charred swordfish, and like, when I tell you, you just eat like...
Like
Emmer Effer.
I thought that the Buca di Beppo platters were too right? large. This is insane. This is like, I mean, it's, yeah. Wow.
The prices are always reasonable as well. And every meal you start off with, of course, why did I not mention lentil soup? Lebanese lentil soup, any Middle Eastern lentil soup will heal you.
The memories I have of you eating lentil soup in Chicago are just incredible, by the way.
Good. Yeah. I would get off a plane and come straight to you, and then we would go to Taste of Lebanon.
Yeah, so good. And I still haven't, you know, been able to find lentil soup that good. You know, it's out there. And I'm sure it's better in just here in LA. It exists. But like, yeah, we'll have to go on a little bit of a journey.
Yeah, essentially, to me, it's the ultimate family style food. That's what eating, you know, in terms of that, that is the Palestinian, the Arabic culture, the Lebanese. It is gathering around a big, big mezza of food, a mezza platter, which has all your dips, all your pickled veg. It's got your shredded, delicious salads. It's got kibbeh balls, which have you ever had a ground beef kibbeh ball?
I think so.
Oh, they're so good. You can also get kibbeh nai, which is the first time that outside of just Lebanese food, I tried more regional dishes, which is raw baby lamb meat.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
it's like a tartare.
Totally. Tartare,
yeah,
yep.
Yeah.
You put onion on top of it and parsley, and you squeeze lemon and you scoop it up with pita bread.
Wow.
I was brave. I tried it.
Sure.
Just have
a little bite if it's offered to you. You don't want to be rude. You want to like try it. That's awesome. There's a couple, it's been hard. Have we gone to Hyatt's here together? It's near me. It's a Lebanese place. It's across the street from the Circus Liquor, which is, you know, very famous in the movie Clueless, right? Where Cher gets abandoned in the valley. Just for everybody's images in their head right now. So Hyatt's is a great Lebanese restaurant that Jonathan Gold's favorite Lebanese restaurant.
Okay.
And he frequented it. And I think it's absolutely delicious. Like, I never had the hummus that has like ground beef and pine nuts on it before. Holy shit.
That used to be my entree that I would order. And people are like, are you crazy? I'm like, no, you don't understand how good this is.
They make a filet like shawarma wrap that is out of control. Everything I've had there is great. I just want, yeah, I would like to have a nice like pita salad every single day of my life. We should go there together. It's fantastic. And there's actually like another Lebanese place in Omaha that now is a staple that I go there every time I go visit now, called El Basha. That's because it hits so hard, like all the notes that you are looking for, like Brooke Van Poppen approved, in my opinion. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
This is like what I'm looking for, because I feel like all the really good Lebanese places, when we lived in Chicago together, we would dine at together. So I'm always like, oh, Brooke would love this. Like,
and specifically, I realized too that here in Los Angeles, and when I go back to also the Detroit area, that I want to check out these top rated Palestinian restaurants, which the food is going to look and feel, because it's the original food. Mm-hmm. Palestine is where this food originated. And, you know, every region has an offshoot of a little something they do their way with a slightly different letter in how it's spelled or what it's called. But that region, everyone, they can just connect over, you know, the food and the gathering of it. And it's just celebration and eating a ton and ton of food and having a good time. And it's all so good for you.
Yeah, that's when we first moved here. It was like Montabal is like the Baba Ganoush of Armenia, essentially, right?
So okay, yeah. Mm-hmm. I was going to say, I think Armenia, I've tried a little Armenian food, and then that Carousel in Glendale is supposedly
Middle
Eastern spot.
Yeah, I think we should go there together, actually. I think we would have a ton of fun.
But yeah, I just wanted to put it out there. If y'all have been paying attention to the horrors that have been happening to the Palestinians or in Gaza, like if it's something that you don't know what to think or you don't know a lot about, I'm just here to tell you that, you know, Palestinians are a beautiful culture, beautiful people. Don't let any of this rhetoric tell you otherwise. And, you know, we've stayed away from, you know, this is a service industry podcast. Mm-hmm. We always get a little political here and there. We stand on our soapboxes. But if you want to ever get into it, I'm full throttle Free Palestine over at BrookVP on Instagram if you ever want to chit chat about it. But yeah. And then if you do live in Michigan, your primary is coming up next week. And if you want to let Joe Biden know that it is not okay that he has not called for a ceasefire, you have an option on the Michigan ballot specifically to choose uncommitted. And basically, the cultural collective of as many you know, Arab Americans as they can get to commit to this, if they say uncommitted and choose to not vote at all come this fall, Biden will lose Michigan because he only won by, I think, 11th. No, he won the state by 150,000 votes. And right about now, with everyone who's pissed at him and potentially losing 60,000 straight Arab Americans who are being ignored and whose tax dollars here in America are literally being sent by Joe Biden to Israel to kill their own family. Mm-hmm. We have so many people in our outer circle of friends and inner circle of coworkers who have lost 11 and 12 up to 20 members of their family in Gaza.
I think up to in the 50s at this point.
For some people, I'm mm-hmm. saying our specific friends.
No, I'm saying our specific friends have lost over 50.
Fatima? Mm-hmm. Oh, gosh. Oh, my God. For fuck's sake. So, guys, yeah. Why would you vote for someone who's sending your money over to Israel to bomb your family? It's insane. And I stand by them. And I'm seeing more annoying rhetoric to be like, yeah. Gaza is what it is. You have to vote for Joe Biden. No, you don't. I don't really want Trump.
Yeah, I really think it's a very powerful statement to have an undecided like check on the ballot. I mean, I think that's really quite powerful. To send a message. You know.
And you can sway the president to freaking do something for a ceasefire. Right. If you're going to lose Michigan. And let me just put it out there one more way, too, is if you say uncommitted, it's also like earn my vote, bitch. Mm-hmm. OK, you don't just get it. You know, there are some elections where, yeah, it's a no brainer. I vote the way I vote. This one's a doozy. But anyways, I just wanted to put it out there. It's you can go to the website, listentomichigan.org or .com. Rashida Tlaib's talking about it, and it's getting headline news everywhere right now.
And I tell you what, it's been said many times before and will be said many times again, but we're saying it here to you guys again right now. If you want to learn about a different culture, go eat their food, you know?
As St. Anthony has shown us over and over again, you know, mm-hmm. you can learn so much by breaking bread with someone.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to have an episode next week that's also all about that.
I know. There's so many feels happening real hard. Big Pisces season, watery, teary-eyed vibes, guys. Magic. Brooke, thanks so much for sharing that information, you guys. And I'm sure we'll be posting that also via Instagram so you guys can dive a little deeper into it. Other than that, guys, server submitted stories, you know where to send them, sideworkpod@gmail.com. Other than that, Brooke, yalla.
You know what we say. Yalla.
Godspeed.
Good tips and Free Palestine.
Oh, she said it.
Until next week, we love you. Bye.